It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and Valentine's Day is only a week away. Not only do we like to celebrate with flowers, it's also a time of year when a floral pick-me-up is just the thing a lot of us need. So we're going to start off the hour today with cut flowers and other floral gifts of love. Richard Giron is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
And between the caucuses and impeachment and winter, it's been almost a month since we've had a hort day. So I have missed you guys. Thank you for being back.
Thanks.
We're all relieved, right?
We need this. We do.
We definitely do. All right. So Valentine's Day, more cut flowers are sold on Valentine's Day than on any other day of the year. It's in the dead of winter, which makes it incredibly challenging. This is such an incredible feat that florists and growers pull off, isn't it?
It is an amazing feat. And it's an amazing feat because cut flowers are a worldwide market. And that's what that's what makes it successful, is that we're bringing in cut flowers from Colombia and Ecuador by the plane loads just for a gift for your spouse or sweetheart.
So all of these things are happening behind the scenes. But of course, we either make a phone call or stop by the florist or order something online. But if we actually go into the store to pick, let's start with roses because they are the
number one
traditional, right? Mm-hmm. So if we go into the store to pick roses, how do you pick roses that are going to last a while?
Well, roses tend to last longer if you kind of collect them or harvest them or select them when they're kind of tight in bud. So even with the shipping from Colombia and Ecuador, they're less than a week old. And they should be fairly tight still in that bud. You want them to open up indoors in your home. So that's what I look for, is something that's showing some nice color, just starting to open, but it's still fairly small so that I can enjoy the peak bloom inside.
Now, of course, red roses are sort of the standard, but there are many other options as well. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, I love the red roses because there's lots of different colors of reds. I also like the kind of peachy pink roses. You also find this time of year sometimes those tie-dye roses. Those are kind of fun as well. And then there's the white roses, which are the most elegant, I think, of most of the roses out there.
When I smell roses that are grown, say, in my yard in summer, the smell is so wonderful. And I often find myself really disappointed when I smell cut roses. Why is that?
Well, cut roses are bred for that, you know, perfect form, that long stem. And sometimes that wonderful scent gets lost. There are cut roses that do have a nice fragrance. So that's another thing you could check when you go into the store, is look for some of those cuts that do have a good fragrance, because there are cultivars that have maintained that through breeding. Usually I find the lavender ones, sometimes the pink ones, but usually the lavender ones almost always smell good.
Really?
So if you can find those, or just, you know, sample a few and say, I want to smell a few roses to see which one smells best, or that florist might say, hey, this one or this one is the one that we like the most for fragrance. There should be a few there.
Now, of course, we've done all kinds of amazing breeding to come up with the wide variety of roses that we have. You mentioned those tie-dye roses. Are those, is that the result of breeding, or are you looking at dyed flowers?
Those are dyed flowers. So there's not the result of breeding, because we can't get that blue, that perfect blue in there. So they're cut, and they're the bottom of the stem is cut and placed into different dyes, and then they draw it up. They're usually a little bit older, because it takes a couple of days to kind of get that effect. And they're usually a little more open, but they're very unique and a little pricey, but very cool. For the right person, it's like the perfect gift.
Well, and all roses are a little pricey on Valentine's Day. I kind of have encouraged my husband to avoid them. We can get roses another time.
This is true. It's a lot less expensive. You can do a gift certificate and say, I'm going to get you a dozen roses in July, and it will be a third of the cost.
and here are some daisies
right now.
So let's talk about some of the other options. Mm-hmm. What are some of your other go-tos?
So there's a lot of, if you want to stay with the roses, I really like the miniature roses that you can buy in a container. So this is, they're small, they're fairly inexpensive. They come in red and pink and peach and white. And sometimes there's a really cool red and white kind of bicolor one that's kind of cute. And miniature roses are generally pretty hardy. So you can purchase them now. They're beautiful on a table. Really nice way to show your love. And then you can plant them in your garden in the spring. So you have them as a miniature shrub all of next year.
Okay. I think I have heard Richard warn me about these mini roses not being winter hardy in Iowa.
That's actually not an issue.
Okay.
They're actually pretty hardy.
I'm misremembering.
They're small in size, but they're actually pretty hardy. I think I would maybe cover them partially with some soil in November, but actually outdoors they do pretty good.
Yeah, they're actually a little bit hardier than the if you were to get the plant that the cut roses were, I guess, sent on. Those are not quite as hardy as those miniature roses. The problem with miniature roses in the landscape is they don't get very big. So they're 2 feet, right? So you've got to find the right spot that you're not tripping over them in your landscape.
But where you can still see them.
Where you can
they're
still
not
see
invisible,
them
right?
And enjoy them. Absolutely.
All right. So miniature potted roses are another option. If you want to go with cut flowers, what are your thoughts about other kinds of cut flowers?
There's plenty of other cut flowers out there. Lilies are usually available. The stargazer lilies or Casablanca lilies, those bring a lot of fragrance as well. You can also think about Gerbera daisies. Sometimes you even might find some tulips or some daffodils this time of year as cuts.
It's easy to tell with roses because you can feel that tight mm-hmm. bud. Mm-hmm. With your other cut flowers, what are you looking for to know that they're pretty fresh?
Right. You want to, so if they actually open up, so like with a lily, usually there's several flowers on a stem. I want one to be open and a couple of others to be in bud. With a Gerber daisy, it's fully open. You just look for bright colors and no damage to the petals. So you're just looking for that, I don't want to say perfection, but you're looking for something that has that brilliant, vibrant color, and it looks like it's not waning.
All right. And when you get cut flowers home or delivered mm-hmm. to you, mm-hmm. what do? What's the best practice?
The best practice is to make sure that if they didn't come in a vase, you put them in a vase of water as quickly as possible. And you may have to recut the stems. And put them in water. And sometimes just recutting the stems allows them to take up more water. When you put them in that vase, you also want to open that little packet of floral preservative that they give you and put that in the water as well. Those are the things you want to do as quickly as possible. You'll find that when a florist gives you cut flowers in a vase, you'll see that there's usually no foliage in the water. They probably already put a floral preservative in there. And, of course, they did a fresh cut before placing it actually into the water. So if it's already in a vase with water, just changing that water as needed or adding to as needed will help prolong the life of those flowers.
All right. And when you want to make a fresh cut, mm-hmm. do you have advice on how to do that? I remember there was a time when people said you had to cut them underwater
at an angle.
Right.
Yeah. I think that if you need to make a fresh cut, I just make it as quickly as possible with the sharpest tool that I can so I'm not crushing it and then getting it back in the water as soon as possible.
All right. So scissors rather than a knife, or do you have a preference?
It depends. All the scissors in my house are not very sharp, so I would go with a knife. But in most houses, I think scissors are usually sharp enough and good enough.
All right. Well, we're coming up on a break in about 2.5 minutes. So let's talk briefly about some of the other potted plants that you can buy. But we can talk more about it after the break as well if we need to. What are some other flowering house plants or potted plants that you like this time of year?
I see a lot of cyclamen. I really love cyclamens. They kind of have that kind of Valentine's Day color coordination, pinks and reds and whites and purples. And they do really well in the cool that we often have in homes. I also think see things like primulas, which are really nice and bright flowers, as well as other things like African violets, which actually make a really good houseplant, long-term houseplant, and they're kind of cute as well this time of year.
All right, and so all of those are things that you probably would be able to keep over a long period, something that's not really disposable. But you also see things in the store like forced bulbs, which that's going to bring you joy for a little while, not forever. Tell me about those.
Yeah, forced bulbs, they're going to be great while they're blooming. They're going to look beautiful. But after they're done blooming, they're kind of out of whack, and we usually just compost them.
But that's okay.
That's easy. It's an annual flower for indoors. Primula is kind of the same way. So there are some that we bring in that are, you know, annuals that we have for a little while. We enjoy them. This is when we really need them this time of year. And then we move on to something else later on.
All right. And with those forced bulbs, I mean, you mentioned the beautiful smell of the lilies. That's a little bit controversial for some people. Not everyone loves the smell of lilies.
Yes, this is true.
With forced bulbs, that's also an issue sometimes, right?
It is. The paper whites are very, very fragrant, and you either love them or you hate them. So smell them first before you bring them into your house.
All right. And know your sweetheart.
Your sweetheart. And then tulips and daffodils have a nice fragrance, or can have a nice fragrance as well. But you're right. Know your sweetheart.
All right. And so many of these also come in just really adorable little pots. I mean, I think that's a big portion of the gift.
Right. With the little hearts and the little bows and, you know, the little teddy bear that goes with it. You can't go wrong.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We will be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We've been talking about cut flowers and other floral gifts of love because, of course, Valentine's Day is only 1 week away. But we'll also answer your questions about any of the plants or trees in your life. Maybe you are planning the garden. Maybe you're worried about a tree that's lost a branch. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we've been talking about gifts for Valentine's Day, but we can also talk about any of the plants you've got on your mind. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And Richard, I mean, it's February 7th already. Is it also time to be making plans about starting seeds?
Well, you can definitely buy your seeds or start looking for those. And you can get your supplies, things like flats and trays, your potting mix, that type of thing. But as far as starting things, it's a little bit early yet.
Okay, but still, that's a good way to combat a little bit of cabin fever.
You can go out and you will see if you go to some of the stores right now, they do have seed, they do have these trays. They're putting it out right now, so you can go out and buy it.
All right, let's go to the phones. Joanna is on the line in Omaha. Hi, Joanna.
Hi. I just have a quick question. Are there any crepe myrtle varieties that will work in the Omaha Council Bluffs area?
There are a few crepe myrtles that the Fleming brothers kind of hybridized, which is, I think, in the Nebraska area. They're not the same as the crepe myrtles that you might expect in the South. So these grow well, but they tend to die back down to the ground. So they're almost a herbaceous perennial in many parts of Iowa and Nebraska. I have some friends that grow some in containers and then they bring them in for the winter so they get a little bit bigger, but they don't develop that nice woody bark characteristic that is typical of crepe myrtles in the South because they typically have severe dieback over the winter.
Joanna asked the right Southerner.
Yes, right? I know. I'm very disappointed. But sometimes I try it. Sometimes I try it anyway.
All right, Joanna, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Mark is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Charity.
Hi, what's your question?
I have an amaryllis that I was gifted, and I have two questions about it. One, it looks like one of the flowers got fertilized, and now I've got this large green knob on the flower stalk, just one of them. And then a second, and I wonder about propagating that, if there's any way to use that to propagate the amaryllis. And then a second question, it came in a red wax wrap, complete wrap around the bulb, and I plan to take that off, and I just want any advice on doing that.
Okay. Well, yeah. Cindy is cheering. I hate those waxed amaryllis bulbs.
I love them.
Because I think it's plant torture myself. But I was given one.
By me.
Yes. And
full disclosure.
It's blooming very, very well right now, but it's not rooting. So basically, I'm going to have to toss it when it's done blooming because it's not rooting and I can't save it.
Yeah, and that may have be the case with yours as well. I think the wax, when they put it on, is quite hot and probably does prevent it from creating roots.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as propagation-wise, yes, you could take the seed, but you'd have to allow the pod to fully mature and then take the seed out and actually germinate that. I would estimate that it might take maybe 3-4 years, maybe longer, for that to grow and actually begin to bloom eventually. So I think it's a kind of a long process. Something that happens, I think, more frequently that's more doable is that they will sometimes form a daughter bulb at the base where you can take that off and that will grow much quicker and then eventually bloom much sooner. But they have to be of a certain size before they'll bloom. And so you're going to have to grow them for maybe 2 or 3 years before they get big enough to bloom.
All right. And this, a daughter bulb wouldn't happen with one of these waxed bulbs.
No.
It's unlikely.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Basically, those that you pot up that actually do root, that you keep from year to year, those eventually do form these daughter bulbs. And oftentimes, they grow pretty quickly once they reach that point.
All right. But also with these amaryllis bulbs, they are fairly inexpensive.
You get
gorgeous blooms after not very much work at all.
No care.
Sometimes none.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really meant to be long-term,
they're
right?
They're not. It's another example of that annual houseplant.
But you can keep them, and I do, so.
But not the wax one.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for your call. Dan is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Dan.
Oh, hi. This would be an outdoor question about, I've got a euonymus burning bush that's grown into my driveway, and I was wondering if I could, get at pruning it a bit, coming up.
Definitely you can. They tolerate pruning quite well. I would typically wait probably till sometime in March, early April, and I would go out there, and you can remove as much as maybe a third, maybe 40% of the plant, reduce the overall size by that, and that should be just fine. I would try not to give it a haircut, but kind of selectively prune it back so it has more of a natural shape to it when you're done, and should be fine.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Dan. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email address, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Ed is on the line in Agency. Hi, Ed.
Hi. I was really interested in your conversation about long-stem roses, and your guest said that they were grown in Ecuador and Colombia. I was in Galapagos Islands last year,
mm-hmm.
and we traveled through Quito, Ecuador, on the mainland.
Right.
We had an opportunity to go out and look at some of the rose plantations where they grow them in the mountains, and it was absolutely crazy to see mountains and hillsides, instead of being covered with cornfields, covered with roses. It was just like fairyland. It was just unreal. But we bought 36 long-stem red roses
nice.
For our one of our guides that had taken us that. It's kind of like a busman's holiday. But in any event, we bought 36 long-stem red roses. They were huge, big, huge, brilliant red roses, and they cost us $7.10.
Right. It's amazing. And then the roses are amazing, too, because they're so close to the equator. They're a little bit higher in elevation, so they have just the perfect conditions that each one of these rose flowers is twice the size of what you could probably grow at home. Yeah, and
right.
It's amazing.
We were up at the higher elevations in the mm-hmm. mountains, and it was kind of foggy and steamy, but yet somewhat cool. And the roses liked the cool weather, and it was just an absolute amazing thing. And mm-hmm. I asked them about how did they get them back to the United States, and they said they collect them, put them on the planes. And they fly them back in an airplane, the same one that we fly down on passenger planes.
Right.
The belly of the planes are coming back full of roses, and
this
was just
true.
Absolutely amazing.
And sometimes for Valentine's Day, there'll be 30 planes a day coming from Colombia and Ecuador just to supply wholesalers and florists with roses. So, but because they're that phenomenal, they are beautiful roses.
But I was just amazed, you know, that these roses would have probably been $150 to $200 in the United States, and they were $7.10
right.
or whatever
right.
the price was.
Right.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, the transportation cost, you know, taking that, you know, plane ride and then getting transportation from Miami to wherever, like Des Moines. Yeah, the cost goes up considerably.
Ed, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. And this is a question from Leanne, and mm-hmm. it's outside your area of expertise. So if you don't have an answer for it, that's okay. But I think it's a good one to ask anyway. She said, could you please speak to the issue of ethically sourced flowers for
right.
Valentine's Day and other holidays? My understanding is that the floral workers in Central America who produce many of the flowers we enjoy do suffer under poor working conditions and are often children. Do you know of fair trade alternatives?
And this is an issue because the, you know, workers in some of the Central and Latin American countries are not paid as much. When I visited Ecuador, I didn't see children working there. That doesn't necessarily mean Colombia or other places that they weren't. So another option, and sometimes a really good option for Valentine's Day for this time of year, is buying a gift certificate for flowers from a local source. And it might be a gift certificate for a local farmer florist that sells flowers in spring or summer, so you may have to wait a little bit. But then that helps support a local economy. It also helps support, and then we know that there's not some of those ethical issues surrounding, because you don't know when it's coming from a florist. Even the florists sometimes don't know.
Right.
And I don't think there's a fair trade moniker that, you know, we see like on coffee and maybe chocolate and some of those other things designating it. I do know that they're working really hard to grow roses more sustainably in a lot of these countries, but I don't know enough about the labor side of it.
All right. Well, Leanne, thank you for that question.
Good question.
866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. You can also tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Janet is on the line next in Tipton. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I believe wholeheartedly feeding my inner four-year-old. So this fall, as I was eating apples from my local orchard, I planted the apple cores.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, I have really sandy soil, and I'm a very hopeful person. If I end up getting some apple trees out of the pot that the apple cores are in, how do I ameliorate the soil and the big things to nurture a young fruit tree? What should I be doing?
Well, first of all, the seeds, you can germinate the seeds, but they do need to be exposed to a cold period.
Yeah, they're in my garage right now. So
okay, so that's basically a cold period of 3 to 4 months. They also need to be exposed to some moisture at the very same time. So you have the cool conditions, the moist conditions, and those things break dormancy. And so if they have that, then the seeds will germinate in the spring. As far as growing them, There's no problem growing them. You can grow them in a pot for a while and then transplant them outdoors if you wish. Now, they will not be identical copies of what you had.
Or what you ate.
Mm-hmm. Or what you ate. So if you had like a golden delicious apple, it's not going to be a golden delicious tree. It's going to be genetically different a little bit, so it's not going to be an exact copy. But it will bear fruit. It will be a normal size tree. Most of the trees that you purchase at a garden center are either dwarf or semi-dwarf. This will be a standard tree. But as far as growing it, basically just a sunny location with a good, well-drained soil.
So you might want to make sure there's a little organic matter mixed in so it's not that total sandy soil that it's in right now and it's got plenty of sun.
Okay.
And then it'll take 4 to 5 years before it starts to flower and fruit.
Sure.
Yeah.
And would you recommend that I water them now? I haven't watered them since probably November, a pot.
So they're in a pot? Are they basically buried in potting soil?
They're buried in potting soil,
okay.
Yeah.
If the potting soil is dry, definitely go ahead and water them, yes, because they do need that moisture in addition to the cold temperatures.
Okay, cool. All right, thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Janet. Now, having said all of that, obviously Janet can make that happen, but
mm-hmm.
since this is not going to be the fruit that
mm-hmm.
she ate,
mm-hmm.
it may also really not taste good, right?
Well, most likely it will. It may be just slightly different. Most apples taste good, so I think it's probably going to be fine.
I'm a pretty picky
apple
eater.
Okay.
It'll probably be smaller. It may not be, you know, the same shape and size. And it's a gamble. It may be a good tasting one, and it may not be as good.
All right.
So, yeah, it's kind of a,
so when plant breeders do this, they cross certain varieties. And they're crossing certain varieties that have very good qualities, and they want a certain product out of it. And so they'll do this cross, and they may have thousands of seedlings, and they'll basically discard the vast, vast majority because the quality is not exactly what they're looking for.
Right.
So they're very picky.
If you really like that honey crisp apple, it's not going to be that honey crisp apple from seed. So that's a big risk. So if you're picky, then this might not be a good idea.
All right. I don't want it to taste like a red delicious.
Don't blame you.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is a question from Tracy. We planted asparagus last year, and it grew very well. We need to transplant it out of the bed it's in. What's the best time?
Bummer.
Okay, what's the best time and way to transplant?
Well, it's difficult to do, but fortunately, it's just 1 year in the ground. If it were like 5 or 6 years, I wouldn't even try. Hopefully, the stalks are still there, so you know exactly where the plants are. And so I would go out as soon as the ground is workable with my spade or shovel and dig those up and then transplant immediately.
And then recognize that it's going to be a couple of years again.
Before you can harvest.
You started the clock over again, so it'll be a couple of years before they're harvestable.
All right, here's another question outside of your area of expertise, but we'll give it a try. From Christina, I know lilies are toxic to cats. Are mm-hmm. there any other flowers traditionally used in arrangements people should know about that could be dangerous to indoor pets?
That one is kind of hard to answer because cats and dogs are different. Cornell usually has a pretty good website that lists some of these on their vet school.
And I think the ASPCA also has
right.
a list on their website where they have a listing of plants that are poisonous to dogs and cats.
Right.
So you might want to try there too.
All right.
I've heard of a lot of things, you know, we hear of amaryllis as well. We know dumcane or Diffenbachia can be toxic. But you know, it's one of those things that we're not for sure. Because, you know, we don't have the pets that volunteer for those kinds of studies.
And we should not. All right. So do your research and put things up high.
Yes. Cacti, you know. Nothing needs cacti.
Dear. Oh, but they knock them over. Trust me. Okay. We're going to go to a break here in a second. But from Marion in Illinois, is now the prime time to prune oaks?
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Try to get it done by early March.
All right. Yes, this is your moment. Maybe not while it's snowing this weekend, but You're in the zone.
Right.
All right. We will take a short break and be back in just a moment. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard Duran is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Horticulture Day. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And this is a wonderful question from Amanda. She says, I am surprising my mother-in-law with a recreation of her bridal bouquet for her 45th anniversary.
Yes.
Very cool idea. She says, how best do I preserve the bouquet? Can I dry it? And how do I do that?
Ooh, you can dry it. You can dry some of the flowers. This one's a little tricky. It kind of depends on the flowers that were in the bouquet. So some things dry really well and some things not so well. I might do a little bit of research on all the flowers that are in there, because some of them we can actually put in like a glycerin solution to help preserve them, and others I would just air dry. So does that make sense?
No, it's a
tough one, because it depends on how well you want to preserve them. We've all pressed.
So you would
flower
take
before.
Them mm-hmm. right. You would take them apart. So not try to preserve the whole bouquet as it is.
You can take them apart, and then you can kind of assemble it back together, maybe, so that it kind of looks like it was. If you have a lot of different flowers in there that require different conditions for preservation.
I just want her to be able to hang it upside down and dry it. That's not going to cut it, probably, though, huh?
Well, it, like I said, it really depends on the flowers. That might work really well for a lot of the flowers that are in there. Baby's breath, you know, that's a piece of cake. But, you know, stephanotis, which is one that's usually in kind of a wedding bouquet, that one, it will just kind of shrivel up into nothing. So if you kind of put it in this glycerin water solution, it will kind of self-preserve and kind of keep some of that turgidity, I guess you could say.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a lot of processing or a lot of a process. The other thing she might think about, because she went through all of this effort, is maybe talking to a florist, because there's usually someone in the vicinity who does this. So you can pay them to do this.
Okay.
So, and it's well worth it, because it can be preserved and then put under glass or kept in a frame for years to come.
All right. Well, it's a wonderful idea, Amanda.
Yeah, good idea.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. Steve is on the line in the Des Moines area, wants to go back to the subject of flower ethics. Hi, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Real brief comment here. Along with questionable labor practices in the South America flower industry, there's also a huge carbon footprint of flying those 30-some planes on Valentine's Day to get those flowers here. Another reason to shop local if at all possible.
Right. The problem with local shopping for roses is they are not grown well locally this time of year. So, yes. But
right.
You're right.
Yep. Great comment, Steve. Thank you for your call. And, of course, a lot of people are wrestling with these decisions as they make their choices.
And that's why you know your sweetheart. So, you know, if this is an issue, don't buy roses from Ecuador or Colombia. So there's lots of other options.
Dan in Riverside has a question. He says, do swamp milkweed seeds purchased from a garden center need to be exposed to cold in order to germinate? So I guess if you buy them in the seed packet.
Right. I would give them a cold, moist period. Even if they would germinate without that, they typically germinate better with that. So what I would probably do is maybe go ahead and plant those like in a flat, water them in nicely, and then slide them maybe in a large plastic bag, and then place the tray in a refrigerator and leave it there for maybe 3-4 weeks, and then take it out and see if the seed germinates. And if it does promptly, great. If it doesn't, maybe put it back in the refrigerator for another week or two and wait.
Now, I have never gone through that kind of process with seeds that I've purchased in a packet. I'm curious about that. Are there other kinds of seeds that we should also be thinking about that with?
It's typically more with the perennials.
Okay.
With your annual plants like your zinnias and your marigolds and petunias, they don't need that. But most woody, most herbaceous plants, most perennial plants, they typically benefit from it because in nature, the seeds would mature in maybe late summer or fall. The seeds would fall to the ground. They're exposed to the moisture and to the cold temperatures, and then they promptly germinate in the spring. And so usually if you give those a little bit of that, the cold temperatures and the moisture, they'll typically germinate very promptly.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. We've got a couple of lines open for you and still a little bit of time to get to calls this hour. 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Jillian. I have a large soft maple that is growing to the point of touching my home, so I need to trim it. Can you tell me when is the best time to trim it and any advice on how much to take off?
Well, as far as doing it, you could do it early this spring, like in March, early April. I will say if you do it then, it will bleed heavily for several days, but that bleeding does not harm it at all, so don't worry about that. You could also do it like in midsummer. That's a good time to do it. As far as the amount, I would try to keep it under 25% as far as the overall size of the tree, and only those branches really that are kind of a issue.
All right. And this is a question about from Earl, also about trees. He says, I have several mature hickory and oak trees that I intend to cut down, but I won't be able to remove them until midsummer. Is there a way to kill the tree during the winter to prevent new growth on the trees?
Well, you could, if they start to sprout next spring, you could make a fresh cut. Let's say you cut them down and then you start to see some sprouts at the base. You could cut them off again in the spring, and then at that point take a herbicide like glyphosate and very carefully apply it to the cut surface, and that will kill it.
Now, what if he girdled the trees now and then cut them down later? Is that a good plan?
You could try that, but the tree might try to form sprouts below that because it still has a very healthy root system, and so it may do that. So that's an option. You could try it, but I'm guessing you're going to have to probably do it again.
Okay. It's funny how quickly a deer can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, yeah, how quickly it can kill a tree, and yes, it takes us a while.
So. Right.
But when you see trees in the woods, oftentimes they're not the perfect specimen.
Right.
Because they have been kind of abused by animals and things like that, too. So.
Right. They're still green and growing.
But they survive. They don't give up.
All right. Rick is on the line. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is, do some houseplants filter the air better than others?
Yes. So NASA has done or did some studies a while back about houseplants and which ones were better at improving some or filtering air, improving indoor air quality in kind of closed containers. And some of the really easy ones did really nicely. So things like spider plant or airplane plant, peace lilies or the aglaonemas, they did pretty well. The cacti and succulents, not as much because they move a little bit less air. So really, any houseplant has this ability to do it, but some are a little bit better than others.
I would be very curious about the differences, though. I mean, I suspect that the differences would be fairly minor.
They are. They are pretty, pretty minor. So especially when you have, you know, a collection of houseplants. So this one might be a little bit more or better at it. But then I think about the houseplants that we have that grow fairly quickly, like that spider plant or airplane plant. That's probably why it's got a lot of leaves. That's probably why it's doing so well.
All
and
right.
Winning that award. Peace Lily is the other one I was trying to think of. Peace Lily as well.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot for your call. I never would have thought to ask that question, but apparently many people have asked that question in the past. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dorian is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Dorian.
Well, good morning. Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I have a collection of plumeria.
Oh, nice.
I guess originally from Hawaii. And because of the length of winter in the Midwest, it's rather challenging to keep my collection healthy. So I have an indoor swimming pool, and that's where I keep them throughout the winter. The problem is the whitefly and other pests that invade them, and I have to keep putting some kind of insecticide.
Right.
Systemic doesn't do much for it. So my specific question is, what would be better, to just hibernate them and cut off all the leaves after the summer and put them in a heated garage, or keep fighting the bugs and keep them in the swimming pool room?
Yeah, I think I would, because you have a collection and because you have many of them, I might next winter try a few at both ways. You kind of know how white flies and some of the other bugs might be coming in for the winter. You might try a few in the kind of heated garage and kind of let them go dormant. The trick here is in making sure that that garage maintains a temperature, because this is a tropical plant. It will not tolerate, even when it's dormant, you know, freezing weather. So making sure that it stays above 40 or, you know, 45, 50 degrees, ideally during the winter. And plumeria has the ability to do this because it has that thickened stem. So I might try a few, but I don't think I'd put my whole collection in that next winter. I'd see how it worked first.
Certainly. Now, the ones that I put in the garage that I would, should I cut off the leaves, and should I keep them moist every now and then when they go completely dry?
Right. You probably do want to water them well, you know, as you're putting them in there. I don't know that you would have to cut off the leaves. I think the cooler temperatures will knock a lot of those off. And if they don't, the cooler temperatures, I doubt very few would be retained throughout the winter.
Very well. Thank you for your wise advice, and have a wonderful day.
All right.
Have fun.
Thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Now, Richard, we were talking earlier about this being a great time of year to buy seeds. Someone just dropped off the line with a question about a magnolia tree. And that made me think about, is it also the time of year to start thinking about what you might want to plant in your landscape in the spring?
Absolutely. As far as perennials, trees, and shrubs, absolutely. The catalogs are out there. The websites are out there. I would begin looking, sure. And there's always new introductions every year. You want to look at those first. And then just go to some very reliable sites and look at some of the plants.
What kind of reviews do you rely upon when you think about those new introductions? Because I know they've been tested. What makes you feel secure?
I like to go to some of the botanic garden sites where they sometimes do a field test, where they might test maybe 25 or 30 different garden phlox varieties, or they might do ornamental grasses, or they might do baptisias, where they actually grow them. It's a botanic garden, and then they evaluate those, and they put it on an article. And then when you look at that, you can say, well, those that have a five-star probably are going to perform very well, and those that are maybe two or three maybe not as well, because obviously the person that is putting out the plant will basically play up its benefits,
right,
but maybe not quite as well as it really is.
Yes, so, in the seed catalog, there can be
some
glowing reviews.
So I want a kind of an impartial person.
All right, let's go to the phones. Aaron is back with that question about a magnolia tree. Hi, Aaron.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah, what's your question?
I've got a magnolia tree that had two limbs broken off during some construction work this fall, and I'm just wondering specifically how I should handle that, when I should cut those off clean, and if there's a treatment that I should use, and what time of year.
Right. So if you have a stub, then I would go out in March, early April, and I would take my saw and make a nice, clean cut. And you basically want to make that cut just beyond the branch collar. And as the branch is attached to the trunk, or a larger branch, it begins to flare out. That is the branch collar. And you make that cut just beyond the branch collar. When you're done, you're done. You don't have to paint it. It's basically done.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Aaron. And do you feel pressure to, back to our previous topic, Richard, do you feel pressure to order early? Because I assume a limited number of seeds and seedlings are going to be available.
I kind of like to order early if I can, in that once you get into March and maybe early April, then the seed company is going to be extremely busy. So it may take a little bit longer to get your seeds, but if you do it now or very soon, it should come quite promptly. I ordered some seed recently, and within a week, the seeds arrived. So,
yeah, he's looking at me telling me I need to order my seed right now.
She does.
I do.
You don't take the same approach, Cindy?
No, I need to. I need to. I usually like to order my seed by the end of January, believe it or not. So to get it done kind of early. And I am late. And yes, Richard has notified me that I'm late.
All right. And do you like to mix in some of the new things every year? I know we all have our old favorites.
Absolutely. As far as annuals, because if you don't like them, you just plant something else the next year. On woody plants, you want to plant something that really is going to perform well. But annual plants, if they don't perform well, just try something else next year.
All right. Well, Richard Geron, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. In 2 weeks, we'll have another February Horticulture Day, and then we'll be back on the air weekly starting in March. Spring is on the horizon. We can almost taste it. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. You can subscribe to our podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for Talk of Iowa and please subscribe. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.